What's up, heroes? Welcome to episode 48 of the Producer Life Podcast. I'm your host, the House Ninja, and today I've got Rip Kenny, a Producer Dojo sensei, host on the Human Music Podcast, and producer of rock-infused dubstep, which, as he says, is the soundtrack to your adventure. Rip Kenny has multiple official remixes to his credit, including his recent remix with Ill Gates of the Dead Kennedys' Nazi Punks Fuck Off. Between his remixes and original tracks, he has nearly 20,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, and in part two of this interview, he goes into detail about his Spotify strategy. In this podcast episode, we get a little meta as he talks about the Human Music Podcast's origin story, offers his advice to aspiring podcasters, talks about his branding and upcoming album, and explains how he found his unique sound.
Right, when I was trying to figure out what my long-term artist project would be, I tried so many random combinations of genres that I thought would be cool because it was an interesting combination in my head. And every one of them just felt joyless.
But first, cue the intro music.
This is the Producer Life Podcast with your host, the House Ninja. Bringing you actionable ideas to improve your music and get it heard.
All right, Evan, welcome to the Producer Life Podcast.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm really excited to have you on the show. I'm looking forward to talking about this rock-infused dubstep sound you've got and some of your remixing and the podcast you're involved with. We've got a lot of cool stuff to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on the show. We have our little Human Music Podcast that we do. So it's nice to be a guest on a different show for a change.
Since we're kind of leading in with that, tell me, the Human Music Podcast started shortly around the same time this one did, actually, about like 7 or 8 months ago. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, why don't we start there? Tell me about how that began. I mean, were you sitting around talking with friends going, hey, let's start a podcast? Or what triggered that?
You know, it's funny. If you'd ask Luke and Tesco, they would tell you that I wasn't 100% sold on the idea when they brought it up. It basically, the genesis of the podcast was me and Tesco doing an accountability hour. And we added Luke to that. And we realized, well, Luke realized after the first couple sessions of us just like chatting about producer stuff, he's like, we should just hit record on this and turn it into a podcast. And I was like, I don't know about that, guys. I don't know if that's really what I want to be doing. And it's so funny because it's ended up being like I love doing it. It's ended up being really fun. And I guess, yeah, so that's kind of the origin of it. Basically us just hanging out and then, maybe we turn this into a podcast. So, but that it is kind of a funny little anecdote that I think a lot of producers can relate to, in that like I think the reason that I didn't want to do it is because it sounds like another public facing thing that I'm gonna have to worry about, like making sure it's all like I have good things to say and like all this. Just like releasing a song, like if you want it to be perfect, it's never gonna get released. So at some point, you just have to get the reps in. You got to release the song, move on to the next one. And I've realized that actually doing the podcast has been great for just building the skill of just talking and explaining yourself as you go along. And so it's been kind of a nice reminder to myself, in a producer sense, but also as far as the podcast goes, for being open to new ideas and not putting creative roadblocks in the way because you want things to be perfect, you know?
Yeah, that's good. Perfect is often the enemy of good. Overthink things too much and then wind up not releasing anything if you aren't willing to let go a little bit. You guys have such great chemistry, which I think is what makes the podcast so entertaining. And it's almost more of a vlog because you guys seem to be getting pretty good traction over on YouTube. But you're also distributing it via Anchor, so it's going out to all of the different audio platforms as well. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Luke does a fantastic job chopping up the different bits and distributing them to the platforms. But yeah, it is kind of, it's funny. Like we would, it is a podcast first and we would hit record and just record the podcast by itself. But, since the origin of this whole thing was a Zoom meeting in which we were just talking about stuff, that's kind of the format that we continued and then realized later, hey, we actually, recording the video of this, we actually have other content that we can post places. So little bit more work. I feel like having it on all the different platforms, YouTube and Instagram included, kind of helps, just boost the potential reach.
I've found one of the other big benefits of podcasting is the opportunity to kind of network and get to know people and bring in new ideas. I've picked up a lot of things from my guests, from producer dojo senseis to people that are running incredible mini festivals here in Orlando, promoters. And so it's an opportunity, particularly during a pandemic, to still be able to talk to people and do some of that networking. What would you say are some of the biggest lessons you've learned from your guests recently?
Yeah, I would, first of all, definitely agree with you that one of the best parts of doing the podcast is getting to link up with people and getting their perspective on things. And fully honest, I will ask questions that I'm just personally interested in, like diving into the details of something they do well and like asking questions to the point where I'm like, no, like I need like an answer that is actionable for myself, which is, I think the listeners appreciate that too, though, because everyone wants a piece of information from the podcast that they're listening to that is actionable, that they can take and apply to their own music, right? And one of the things that I wasn't finding in the current ecosphere of podcasts was exactly that. People talking about how they transitioned from being a bedroom producer into the limelight, right? Like you have Back to Back with Willie Joyce, fantastic producer podcast. And I love hearing the story of all these big name DJs. But one thing that they just gloss over is how they went from no name to famous. They're just like, oh yeah, and I had this one release and then I was touring. It's like, that I know for a fact that's not how it's happening, right? Like that answer doesn't satisfy me. So one of the things that I always try really hard to do is make sure that I'm getting the answers that I want as a listener, as myself, right? Like making sure that we're diving enough into the details that people can take actionable steps away from it. But specific things that I've learned, so varied. We just had Squashed Out on our podcast. Well, we recorded it last night. And he's a fantastic dubstep producer. And he was talking about stereo width. I mean, this is a pretty specific example, but stereo width how you want to make sure that your side information is basically the same level as your center information. And so using like a mid-side processor or a specific plugin like Waves Center is one that I've used before, but just to make sure that like the content there is roughly the same volume is something that I hadn't even really thought to check before. But yeah, just little stuff like that you just add to the toolkit and apply to your stuff later.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did he explain why that was? When I mean, a lot of clubs and festivals think it gets summed to mono anyway.
Totally. It actually came about when we were asking him what some of his, because he teaches people at I think Defier, and we were asking him what some common mistakes people make are, and he's like, some people will push everything out in stereo, and then, naturally, if you're pushing everything to stereo without, the origin of that sound being like fully stereo wide, right? Like using wideners or stuff, that people will forget the fact that your center is going to be left wide open at that point. So Yeah, I mean, the context of your song working on a mono or stereo system, I don't think necessarily was as important, but just making sure that when people are listening on speakers and headphones, that it sounds the same, right? I frequently like to mix on my headphones first, almost exclusively, and I will reference my B reference is my monitors, just because I know that the headphones are going to be the same listening experience every time. Mm-hmm. The speakers, depending on what's in the room or how I'm sitting in the chair, how far I am from them, can give you just a slightly different image of the song. And so I just, when I had an apartment that was a real small space and the room that I had was just peaks and valleys and just terrible response, I was listening to a podcast with Audion, and he said he mixes all of his records on Sennheiser HD 600s. And so that Christmas I asked for Sennheiser HD 600s and I've been mixing all of my records on them ever since. But that being said, working only in headphones, you do need to be aware of the pitfall that the side information does end up being just slightly louder. So when you take the headphones off and you're listening on the speakers, you might notice some differences in leveling. And normally that's because of that effect. And so just, I think the point he was trying to make is it's just another thing you need to be cognizant of. And it's one thing mm-hmm. that, beginners will typically just not grasp or not even think about, that concept. So, yeah, I mean, it's so funny. It's such a simple concept, but you know, there's always a million things that, that you could be double checking and might not. And so just adding that to the toolkit is good.
So you guys all kind of, you co-host the show, and you mentioned that Trap Jesus, Luke Rain, does most of the posting, mm-hmm. In terms of through Anchor and your distributor. How do you guys, do you divide up other aspects of it, like the cover art? Do you, what's your schedule for posting? It's weekly, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's definitely a group effort so we have a few endeavors that we're working on together. One of them being an unnamed sample pack that will be coming to you guys very soon. we'll have to have you beta test it.
Awesome.
If you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, yeah, Luke, honestly, like, I'm not going to pretend like I do an equal share of work for getting the podcast out, because I don't. And I think that Tesco would agree that Luke is an absolute rock star with that. But yeah, the team of the three of us working on all of the projects that we do, we actually do split the workload pretty evenly. I would say that, like you said, like the three of us do have really good chemistry as a team. And that's probably why we've continued to do this thing. And the other stuff that we're working on together.
If there's other producers out there that are thinking about starting a podcast, what advice would you give them aside from make it actionable?
Yeah, honestly, stop putting okay. So I'm speaking for myself personally. If I was going to start a podcast, I'd probably think up a million ideas on what to talk about and then never hit record. Because I wouldn't have a good enough layout or a good enough plan. Just start with your friends and come up with a few key things you want to ask them, and then make it conversational. You know, people are interested in listening to just a natural conversation, feel like they're there in the room with you talking about this stuff. Don't take it too seriously. Don't make it too formal. But do hit record and then see what you get.
Yeah. Your point about making it feel informal and like they're sitting there in the room with you, I think that's one of the big benefits of podcasts, is that your audience gets to start feeling like they know you, you know, whereas they may, attention is so short today. You know, you're lucky if you get somebody to watch or listen to the first 30 seconds of a YouTube video or an audio stream, but podcasts, people will sit and listen to for 20 minutes, a half hour, an hour. And over time, it kind of develops into a relationship with the host. I had Wade Sutton from the 6 Minute Music Business podcast is an early guest on here, and he ran a phenomenal short form podcast that was very actionable. It's still out there. It's also on YouTube. You should check it out. But he recently stopped because of the financial pressure from COVID, and he had been doing this for years. And when he announced that he was moving on to a different field, and this is a guy that's been in the music industry for a decade.
Yeah.
You know, it hurt. I was sitting there in the car and I had to sit and listen to the rest of the podcast. And I was just like, oh man, you know, I'm used to listening to this guy 5 days a week. And all of a sudden there's this hole in my schedule and I'm going to miss hearing him.
Totally.
So anyway, yeah. It's a very unique format, but I've enjoyed it.
It is definitely. And one of the things that you mentioned that I think is really important is the attention span of people nowadays. Like it used to be minutes, long, and now it's 7 seconds. That's like Humans have devolved into being goldfish. It's crazy. And so having the opportunity to invite your listeners to spend an hour with you and have them actually, you know, put you on in the car on the way to the work, or while they're working out or whatever. It's cool that people are actually tuning in for that long an amount of time when you have that attention span in mind, you know?
Yeah. It's very humbling that somebody would spend that much time.
Totally.
You know, when there's so many other things that they could be listening to. So if you're out there listening right now, thank you very much.
Appreciate you.
Yeah. Every one of you. So now that we've gotten this kind of meta portion of the podcast where we talk about podcasting on a podcast, let me back up to you a little bit, which is where we would normally start. I want to kind of talk a little bit about branding and who you are as a DJ. I guess a good place to start would be your name. Is that a South Park reference?
It is. It is.
Okay. Rest in peace, Kenny. Poor Kenny.
Exactly. Poor Kenny. He always dies, but he never gets to rest in peace. It's one of those funny things that we were just sitting around, me, my good friend, Eric, and my now wife, Shelby, and we were watching South Park, and just out of nowhere, like Kenny dies and Shelby blurts out, "Rip Kenny, rest in peace, Kenny." And like, we both kind of looked at her like, that's kind of catchy. And it just ended up sticking. And I always thought it was like, it kind of rolls off the tongue. It's got a hilarious connotation to something, a medium that I love in South Park. The creators, There's so much depth to that show that like you wouldn't normally, like most people at face value take South Park as just being toilet humor. But there's so much like important, well-rounded commentary in that show that is like beneath the surface. And I just kind of love that concept of like not taking yourself too seriously, but also having something important to say. And then also like Rip Kenny, like rip that has like a connotation to like ripping down a mountain, or, you know, it kind of has a ring to it that I associate with the sports that I do. So, it kind of has like that double edge to it. So it's stuck, and, I like it enough.
It's cool. It's very cool. I was just curious about the origins. Sort of the second part of that was the outdoor motorsports part of your branding. I mean, I see that on your Spotify page. I see that all over your Instagram posts. Outdoor sports enthusiast is very much a part of who you are as a musician. Can you talk about how that either influences your music or how that influences your audience?
Yeah. So really, the genesis of this project and the music that I make for it is really going back to the roots of like, okay, screw trying to make something that someone else hasn't done yet for the sake of making it, right? When I was trying to figure out what my long-term artist project would be, I tried so many random combinations of genres that I thought would be cool because it was an interesting combination in my head. And every one of them just felt joyless, you know? And so I realized at some point that instead of doing that, let me just figure out like exactly what I love and my unique cross section of interests, that has really stuck with me over the years. And so that's really kind of how the rock and like early punk, emo, Linkin Park, My Chemical Romance influence mm-hmm. made its way into the music. But then kind of in the same spirit, the outdoor motorsports and all of that is really like my life as well. Like basically the two things that I give a shit about are making music and doing those sports outdoors. In a previous life, I raced downhill mountain bikes professionally. That was like the thing that I did middle school, awesome. High school. I turned pro my senior year of high school. And, if that sport actually paid well enough to bear the risk associated, I probably would have not gone to college and done that full time. But I knew that that really wasn't a good longevity play for myself. So I went to college, I continued racing mountain bikes for fun. And, in college I picked up, DJing and then making music. But I realized as I was talking about the return to origins of what I truly like musically, I felt that it was only natural that the brand associated with that would include those things that mean a lot to me. Right. And it also helps in having something different to say, having my perspective on life and music being influenced by those things, somewhat high adrenaline intensity, but also like emotionally impactful, right? Like if you are riding your snowmobile and you make it up like a sketchy hill climb to the top and you're like exalted at the thing you just did, like that's like a moment in time and like a feeling that you want to capture and take with you, right? And so really like all of the records that I write for this project are like extensions of those experiences, right? Like I want the music to sound like those moments feel. And I think in that way, it really helps clarify the what that gets included in that music and the emotional connection that needs to be in that music. And it just makes it more fun. Like I know when a song is going to work because I have that like visceral emotional connection to the chords or the bass line or whatever it is.
You sound like Spiderhound. I think that those were his exact words.
Definitely. Spiderhound, what a guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really kind of the why of that being included in the brand. It's really just who I am, right? And I want to portray the most accurate picture of me and my music. And I want to make it very clear the origin of that music and why it sounds the way that it does. And the moment that it reflects and could be, if you're listening to my music while you're shredding down the hill on your snowboard, that is the ideal place to listen to it. And everywhere else, when you're listening to it in your car or at your home or on headphones lying in bed, like ideally it would transport you to a moment in which that kind of emotional intensity was present, right? Like being able to escape for a second, and have that kind of transport you somewhere else. I love that concept. And I think that it genuinely resonates with me, and hopefully that shows through in the music.
When I was looking at your YouTube channel, I didn't see a whole lot of videos there right now. Have you thought about using footage from you when you're out there doing sports and then incorporating that and sort of turning it into videos to go along with your music?
Yeah, that's a great point. So my YouTube channel currently has two videos in which I kind of did that. The workload to create a 3-minute long video that incorporates visually appealing content plus those videos, it's more work than my YouTube channel following, which is nothing, basically is worth for. But it's definitely something on my mind. When I did the Producer Dojo Summit and Kelly Finn did visuals, I sent her a bunch of my favorite, GoPro footage or other clips yep. from me doing those sports. And she made this incredible visual presentation of exactly what I would want those YouTube videos to be. And so I've used that that visual set as visuals, you know, as a visual reference for what I want to do in the future. And I it is on my to-do list to catch up with some of the videos and get them on YouTube for the songs that I have released. But at a bare minimum, when I am doing a larger project, like this EP that's coming out in winter, or the album in the future that I'm beginning to write right now, there'll definitely be a bigger visual story that goes, you know, with those images and other, you know, stimulating visual content that kind of ties that whole thing together.
Since you bring it up, tell me about the album. What are you planning, and how far along are you?
Yeah, so it's I definitely have some lofty aspirations for what I want to do with it. I don't know if you you definitely recall, because you submitted music for the Get Outside Cypher. And that was basically a test run for this far-fetched concept I had, which is music plus visuals and then an actual written story to go along with it. I don't know if you remember the video that came out, or even I do believe the SoundCloud recording of that mixtape. I wrote this story and then posted it in timestamped comments throughout the SoundCloud mixtape, but essentially taking the intensity and the transportive nature of the music and narrating it, sprinkling in some bigger pieces of basically visual content to go along with it, and create this kind of transformative piece of music plus story plus some fun visuals to watch that you could plug into at any level, right? If you listen to the music, like, you enjoy the music. If you wanted to listen to the music and watch the visuals, like, in the background, great. Like, they're there. And then if you wanted to really spend the time to sit down for 45 minutes, watch the visuals, listen to the music, and get the whole story that's being told with that, then you could tune in at that level too. That's kind of the grandiose plan for what the album's going to be. I guess now that I'm saying it on the podcast, it kind of has to be true. So I think
speaking it into existence.
Yeah, I think this is probably good to push me to do the whole thing, because it is so many steps and so much work to get all of that wrangled in. But I do think that if presented in the right way, people, you know, it's something different for people to care a little bit more about.
Sure. I mean, it's all about creating experiences these days. So that sounds like a great concept. Now, are you going to, since there's a strong visual portion of the album, is that going to go on YouTube, or is there some other platform you're going to use to tell the story along with the music?
Yeah, exactly. It would be a full video that would go on YouTube as like the main release source, which is a good kick in the ass to probably try and get some other stuff on YouTube so people are subscribed there. So it doesn't hit,
you said it, I didn't.
Yeah, I know, right? So it doesn't hit zero viewers when I have this piece of content that I spent thousands of hours making.
Yeah, I am totally sympathetic with you about the time it takes to edit videos. The EDC Orlando happened about a year ago here in Orlando, and I shot 50 gigs of video on my smartphone, and then spent the next 2 weeks editing it down to a 4.5 minute after movie. But I had a blast, and it turned out really well. Whether or not that was worth the effort, you know, I've got like 450 views on it, which is, you know, pretty good for my standards at this point, but it was still a lot of work.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things. I mean, even with like a podcast, like, you wish the second it was released that everyone cared, but it's just not the case. And I think the important part is that you continue to create content that you personally love, and that authenticity shows through, and not really like being invested in the result, but not letting the result purely dictate the stuff that you're putting out, the stuff that you're making, right? So if it was fun for you, and at the end of the day, when you watch that after movie, it makes you happy and it reminds you of good times. That's I think that's really the metric to be worried about there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's ultimately why you should be making music, is because you're making music that you enjoy. You're doing something creative. It's an outlet that you enjoy. Ideally, it pays the bills also, but I think being a music producer in general is a lot like being a downhill mountain biker. You don't get in it to get wealthy.
Yeah.
So true.
So true.
In the first half of this interview, Evan and I talked about the Human Music Podcast, and he offered some specific advice for any of you thinking about starting a podcast. First, start. Hit the record button and don't overthink it. I'm sure my first episode was truly cringeworthy. In fact, I'll link it in the show notes if you want to hear it, because we all got to start somewhere. Second, start with friends and keep the tone conversational. Third, seek out actionable ideas for your audience and push your guests to dig in on the details. In part two of this interview, I do just that, and Evan spends nearly the entire interview sharing his Spotify secrets that helped him get to 20,000 monthly listeners. Make sure to visit the show notes page at producerlifepodcast.com, episode 48. While you're there, sign up for my email list, where I offer free music and my music festival packing list. I'd also love to hear what you think of the podcast, and if you've got any ideas for future guests and episodes, just reply to any of my emails. I read every single reply. Until next week, this is the House Ninja, reminding you to be someone's hero today.